You're listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux and Matt Somerville.
Predictably drunk. Just like Ross Baker said, he's very accurate with those announcements here at the beginning of the show. It is Sam Marcoux. It is Matt Somerville, I believe. Are you there, Matt?
You know what we should do is we should have Ross Baker do an intro when he's totally fucking hammered. Just one time. Just one time. Because he sounds so together. He sounds like he's so with it. I just want to hear his professional radio voice completely sloppy fucking drunk hammered.
I'm gonna peel back the curtain here. Ross Baker is completely shit faced every single time.
He sounds so good.
Ross Baker, when he's sober, is actually he sounds like a very high pitched screech from Saved by the Bell. So we actually have to liquor him up prior to doing the announcements so that he can get that golden throat going and sound all sexy and give us that professional vibe.
Give his golden throat something.
Oh, look at that. Look at you must be drinking. What are you drinking, sir?
I'm drinking this thing that has been recommended to me many times out of San Diego. It's Pizza Port. I don't know if you've ever had Pizza Port.
Pizza Port. That sounds like a place where you get pizza.
Yeah, Pizza Port Brewing Company. It's actually in Carlsbad, to be technical. And it's a pizza parlor, but they also brew beer, and they brew quite good beer. I'm going to say this: never had a beer where I didn't know what to say as a review. If somebody asked me how was that, I could not tell you how it was. I could tell you that I liked it. I could tell you that it's a pilsner. I can describe the pictures on the can, which is a horse race and a dark beer. But I know it's not a dark beer because I looked at the contents of the beer and it's not dark. It's not a dark beer. Pilsners are not dark beers. It tastes amazing, and I've never tasted anything like it. And I don't know what it is. It's a mystery in a can. It's a mystery in a can that was pleasant.
How do you not – like where would you drink this? I mean,
I went to BevMo, to be honest. I went to BevMo to I always try to get something new when I'm at BevMo, try to try something new that I haven't tried before. And the last time I was there, I got an IPA by Pizza Port that I really enjoyed. And I thought, okay, let's keep the Pizza Port going. And I grabbed this. It says at the top, good beer brings good cheer, which can't be argued. So I saw that and I said, you know, this can isn't lying to me. I'm not going to lie to this can. I bought it and I enjoyed it. And I don't know the fuck why. I don't know why.
You judged that beer book by its cover and worked out for you. Well done.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I implore everyone to try it. And then I invite you to explain to me why it's a good beer, because I don't know.
I have to check that out. I don't know if they have Pizza Port up here. I gotta have to do some research. So it's the Pizza Port Brewing Company.
Yes, correct.
So I'm going to have to do some research on there and see where I can find that up here in the Bay Area. Because if they're down in San Diego is one of those, Carlsbad, whatever, is one of those big hubs for craft beer. So they probably have some sort of distribution pipeline coming up here to the Bay Area, which is very timely because we're going to talk about a beer pipeline a little bit later on Stupid Drunken News. But before we do that, we are doing What's on Tap, and Matt just told you.
What are you drinking?
Well, I was actually in the middle of looking up Pizza Port here after your glowing review, but it's going to be hard to top what I'm drinking. I'm drinking a favorite. I've talked about it on the show before, but dude, Drake's Denogonizer is by far it's one of the top beers I've ever had. It's one of those things where you're like, wow, that's just really damn good beer. And it's available year round. It's actually available in bottles now. They're actually bottling it at Drake's in San Leandro and shipping it around the country, where you can actually go to any liquor store and rob the guy at the counter and steal this shit, because it's probably very expensive for a 4-pack. But if you have the money, invest the money in Drake's Denogonizer. It is a beer that you could actually – look, put it this way. If you want street cred, Denogonizer, man, that is what it is when it comes to beer. Drake's Denogonizer, a fantastic beer. Drake's is blowing up, man. I actually tweeted them the other day. They tweeted back. They're all over Silicon Valley, the show on HBO. That's your favorite.
Oh, cool. No, I've never seen it, but I've heard great things.
So season one and season two, Ballast Point was everywhere, and there would be like, you know, a poster in the background, and they were drinking a Ballast Point. This year, the budget went through the roof, I'm assuming, because I kind of even told Drake's, I tweeted them the other day and said, you know, it's a little much with the advertisement on Silicon Valley. And they wrote back with, well, what do you mean? I'm like, it's in every scene. Like, there's just literally boxes of Drake's and Denogonizer on the desk. That's when they're funny. Working on the show. It's very intense. It looks like that scene from Wayne's World where they're pretending to not, you know, sell out while doing all those fake commercials. Yeah. You're very aware of the product placement on Silicon Valley when it comes to Drake's. But you know what? It's a fantastic company here in the Bay Area. Very good beer. Like I said, I can't speak more. I mean, Denogonizer is so good. It's available year round. I'll go to a beer festival where they come out with, like, you know, seasonal releases and shit like that. I'll still go to Denogonizer.
That's like, the way
you can
to do
drink it.
It
at a party. You can drink it, you know, while you're at work. I mean, it's the perfect beer to drink while you're driving. It's just a fantastic beer. Like, I can't speak ill of that beer whatsoever.
I can speak ill of you telling people to drink and drive. People don't do that. He's the host of the show and I'm the co-host. I understand that. But just this one time, listen to me. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I don't even remember doing that.
That's fine. You're hammered. I hear that we have quite the story coming up down the pipeline here. A comedian who's also a pro. Is he a pro wrestler or an amateur wrestler?
So it's very funny the way you labeled him as a comedian versus a pro wrestler. We're actually going to get that answer from Mikey G himself, because that's one of the questions I had when I was speaking to Mikey G here recently. Is he a professional wrestler who happens to do comedy, or is he a stand-up comedian who happens to do professional wrestling? This guy's an independent professional wrestler, Matt. He grew up around some of the names in professional wrestling that if you follow that show, business, sport, if you will, you would recognize the names that Mikey G runs around with. He goes by the name Seabass right now. He is based out of Santa Cruz, California. The guy runs comedy shows. He's got a great show. I just headlined one of his shows a couple weeks ago and had a fantastic crowd. Very, very interactive audience in a fun way. They knew how to do it. If you guys have ever heard our, you know, rules of comedy, I yell at and I shame the crowd a lot. This crowd was in it. They were awesome. Runs a great show.
Did Anthony DeTangelo go to that show?
No, he did not. Our friend Anthony, who lives there, did not go to the show.
Resident of Santa Cruz? What a piece of shit.
Total piece of shit. That's your friend.
God, I know. Why, though?
Well, I probably because you make poor decisions. Some of the decisions we've talked about on the show before.
Be ashamed, Anthony DeTangelo. You live there, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but you got to listen to this interview. It's me and Mikey G. It's hilarious. Mikey started a tour. I think he's calling it the Cottonmouth Tour because he partakes in that wacky tobacco as well. And listen to this shit, Matt. He starts this tour, and the very first leg of the tour is at a comedy club in St. Louis. And so the start of his first national tour, and he gets arrested the very first night. So we're going to talk about that. You guys are going to hear that. It's unbelievable. The guy's a maniac, and I love him for it. He does a great Randy Savage impression, too. So
nice.
Let's take it to that interview. I mean, why are we even talking about the interview? Why don't we just take you guys to the interview? Let's just talk to Mikey G, and then we'll come back and talk about this weird German beer pipeline thing. I got to get Matt's take on this. So check it out. Here's Mikey G. All right, I'm sitting here with Mikey G, a.k.a. Mikey Gordon, a.k.a. Seabass, a.k.a. the Santa Cruz Kid, a.k.a. How many aliases do you have now?
A thousand. I'm the man of 1,001 aliases, similar to Dean Malenko being the man of 1,001 holds. 1,000 holds.
Is one of your names Armbar? Because Chris Jericho was the man of 1,001.
That's every other name is Armbar.
Armbar is every other one. If for anybody
hold on, we're
going
to go to commercial and then come back and it's still going Armbar.
We don't have commercials on this because I can't get a goddamn sponsor to save my life on this show. I was told by a brewery recently that they could not be attached to the word drunk here on Predictably Drunk, which made no sense considering they literally supply a product that gets you drunk, but whatever.
I'm half Jewish, so, you know, like, I think everybody needs a good Jew on the team. I know I need somebody to strategize for me. We were talking yesterday. Maybe you could use a good half Jew on your team.
Yeah, I need some sort of lawyer or something. I'm not sure. But I am sitting here with – well, I guess that's going to be my first question. How do you identify yourself, sir? Are you a professional wrestler who does comedy, or are you a comedian who does professional wrestling?
You know, I'm just a dude that is trying to work really hard to not have a real job. So whatever, I just throw whatever shit against the wall and whatever sticks. But right now,
I believe they call that an entrepreneur.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Like, you know, I've been doing, I'm 32 years old, almost 33. I've been doing professional wrestling since I was 16, off and on. I ran shows off and on. I booked, you know, like national music tours for Afro Man, if you want to call it national tours, you know, and a lot more recently, I've, you know, started and delved into like doing stand up comedy full time. I was Afro Man's opening act. So that's why I started with comedy and then we just moved on. So
how did you hook up with Afro Man? Okay, that's the Because I Got High guy, right?
Yeah. Who became a two-hit wonder after he knocked that lady out off the stage. that was him. But I got hooked up with him. You know, it was one of those things, like seeing how much shit will stick to the wall. And, you know, I got the opportunity to book a couple of shows in my hometown of St. Louis for him. They liked me, him and his producer, and I booked shows for him, you know, regionally and then across the country. Found out how awesome California was, and now I live out here.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit off the air. I mean, you live in Aptos, which is basically a suburb of Santa Cruz.
Right.
You, to me, and I mean this in a compliment, you are very Santa Cruz in terms of your lifestyle and talking to you, your personality, how you dress, everything that you do as far as how much I know you. You seem like you've embraced the Santa Cruz lifestyle. But it was interesting to me because you were on tour with Afro Man. You guys did a gig at the Catalyst. You were booked at the Catalyst downtown. Yeah, yep. You love the area and just the atmosphere of the place that you decided almost right then and there to move here. Is that right?
Pretty much. Like, you know, I lived in St. Louis for 30 years of my life. Came here on tour the first time I came here. We had a show the day after Labor Day in 2013. Fell in love with the city. It's, you know, it's everything that I've always wanted. You know, I live a block from the beach.
You really do. We're at Mikey G's house right now. And I was almost late because I was walking or driving and just kind of looking at the atmosphere around here. Man, you live in an awesome neighborhood.
Well, you know, like if you have ideas and goals, and this is one thing that I've used in everything I've ever done. If you have an idea what you want to do, you just got to make rational steps to really get there instead of just having an idea and being like, oh, well, I didn't get there. Oh, well, woe is me. You know, I always knew I wanted to come out, live by the beach. And that's what we found. I mean, like, we begged the guy for 6 months. We knew he was moving. We're like, hey, when are you moving? We need to get into this place. This place is awesome. This is my dream place. I don't own the house. I just pay rent, an astronomical amount for rent, but hell yes.
I like that you said you have to make rational decisions, and you made the decision to move out here based off after a rap tour and said, I like the area. I'll move here. That's like the exact opposite of what you just gave in terms of advice.
No, totally. Like, you know, there were times in my life where marijuana – had a lot bigger influence on my financial situation. And, you know, at that time it did. And California is a lot different from Missouri as far as those rules go. So, you know, I'm a patient out here, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, I do my thing. And that's why I wanted to move out here. You know, I got arrested like 15 times in St. Louis for possession of small amounts of marijuana. You know, it was ridiculous. So, like, why not move to a place to where you can pretty much smoke weed in front of the cops and you're not going to get arrested?
You could probably smoke weed with cops here and not get arrested for the most part. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of California if you are partaking in that lifestyle, which you have, you know, you are part of. You're actually in the middle of a nationwide tour right now. What is the name of your comedy tour?
We call it the Cottonmouth Comedy Tour.
Cottonmouth Comedy Tour. So I'm assuming you guys are not just exactly fans of the Cottonmouth Kings rap group. There's a logic behind
it.
Yeah,
well, they spell with a K. We spell it with a C, uh-huh. You know.
Yeah, so
but that's totally where we got the idea. We're at the Las Vegas Hemp Fest last year. We had just got done booking like a little shitty, like go to the bars and ask them for $100, like that kind of comedy tour,
right?
And I was like, man, this is stupid. Like we were at the Las Vegas Hemp Fest. We were watching the Cottonmouth Kings on stage, and I was like, you know what? We should just book ourselves as weed comedians and just call it the Cottonmouth Comedy Tour. And I swear to God, as we're driving home from Vegas, my girlfriend, Alusha, who's a way better comic and writer than I am.
She's pretty funny. I've seen her perform, yeah.
She's hilarious. She's way better than me. I beg her to give me jokes all the time. But we were shooting ideas off of each other on the way back from Vegas. We got home, and then I just started, you know, putting it out there. It was, you know, basically we just asked for sponsorship money from dispensaries and head shops that can benefit off of a free comedy tour coming to a local place near them.
Right. You know? No, it makes total sense. And I'm glad you mentioned St. Louis, and I'm glad you mentioned getting arrested, because we have a story about this particular tour that had just kicked off, and we already have controversy, but I don't want to get to that yet. I want to talk about a couple other things, because you mentioned that you've been professional wrestling. Yes. Yeah. It's called a tease, right? We're teasing the audience a little bit.
I love it.
You mentioned professional wrestling. You have been wrestling basically half your life at this point, right? You started at 16. You're 32 years old.
Yeah, wait. Serious F, definitely needs to pick you up, man. You are just throwing in teasers, segmenting this, flip this thing up. Man, I feel like I'm gonna on the most professional show I've ever been on.
Look,
right
this
now.
Is this is Predictably Drunk. This is smart people talking about stupid things. That's our tagline. We're very smart people. We're talking about very stupid things right now. I mean, where else are you going to go from Afro Man to Cottonmouth Kings to professional wrestling to getting it? Well, I guess actually all those things go hand in hand on some level, but
they do really.
Yeah. So tell me about that, because people that listen to the show, people that are fans of mine, know that I actually got started before comedy. I started wrestling at 17 out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was embarrassing when you're 17 and you have to have your mom co-sign a contract in front of people like Dilip Singh, who went on to be the great Khali, and a couple of others.
My
Crash
mom
Holly
did it too.
You know, Aaron O'Grady, Crash Holly, Mike Modest, Donovan Morgan, those types of folks. Vinny Massaro, who I think is still kicking around these parts, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while, you know, we have him on our shows down here in Santa Cruz. Real cool dude.
Vinny's a great guy. We used to work at a gym together, believe it or not. If you look at Vinny and you look at me, you would think, well, what did you guys do? Were you guys in the back?
No, did you work for a guy named Jim?
Yeah, the boss's name was Jim, the promoter. No, so how did you get into it? You were a fan growing up. You were a huge fan.
Yeah, I was a fan growing up. We did backyard. I started backyard wrestling with a guy named Matt Corklin, who, you know, big pro wrestling fans will know him as either Evan Bourne or Matt Sydal.
But big, like, name in the professional wrestling field.
Yeah, he was just in the best of Super Juniors over in New Japan, you know, internationally known wrestler. But, like, seriously, one of my best friends. But we both started. We were talking shit on a local wrestling radio show that was on the AM, you know, AM dial. We'd all call up and talk shit about our backyard wrestling promotions, you know. But we all drew. Sometimes we charged, like, $2 at the door. But, you know, we were drawing, like, 100, 150 people to our backyard promotions, and the best of us just started training at this local place.
But wouldn't you kill for 150 people to your comedy shows? And you know,
man, the beauty of high school. I mean, this was before Facebook and social media, and, like, because you didn't have shit to do, you know, like, what were you going to do? Like, go to the roller rink? You're too old for that.
Yep.
In your first couple years of high school, you can go bum around the movies or the mall. I mean, you outgrow that shit. But
exactly right.
We were putting on stellar backyard wrestling shows that people came and checked out. It was tight, you know.
No, you're right. I mean, I you know, I'm bonding to you right now, and it's not just the atmosphere going around. It's what we're talking about here. I used to backyard wrestle. In fact, my co-host on this, Matt Somerville, we were just talking the other day. He used to run. His mom was the coolest lady ever.
Yeah. Only so was child. Matt's mom.
Yeah. Matt, you know, we both Matt's had our Matt. He was an only child, so basically he got to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
And his mom just let him run roughshod over the. He's in the movie industry now, and primarily it's because he used to build movie sets in his backyard and film these short vignettes, and eventually he got hooked up down in Hollywood. He loved wrestling,
of course.
So we had a wrestling ring in his backyard. We ran shows. The pinnacle was I was the ref, and it was a hardcore match, of course, because you're a backyard wrestler and you're a teenager and you don't know any better. And Matt, actually at the time, his best friend was this guy named Tony, and they mapped out this whole match, and it culminated on the roof, where I would be the crooked ref. We would turn on Tony, and we would actually throw Tony off the roof of the house,
of course,
through the announce table, where we had strategically put, I think, a pillow on the concrete, thinking that it was going to be fine.
On the concrete.
So we're up on the roof. There's probably about 50 people at this show, right? They're underneath. They're down below. And they can't hear it. But Tony starts backing out. And, you know, rightfully so.
Of course.
You know, he's looking at this going, you know, yeah, the roof is kind of tall.
When you're looking up at something, I mean, yeah, it looks high. But when you're looking down from it, you forget about that extra 5 or 6 feet that you're looking down from the top perspective. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Your eyes are at the top of your body, and there's an extra amount of feet there. So, you know, he's starting to say, I can't do it. We're just going to have to come up with another finish. We're like, we can't do another finish on the roof. What are we going to do, climb down and look like pussies? We built up to this point where we have to throw him off the roof. So,
and you're having this conversation on the roof.
On the roof while, you know, we're pretending to beat the shit out of each other and while actually beating, you know, the shit out of each other. So
and you're trying not to call spots in
exactly,
front of people.
Exactly. Like, and everyone's down below. You got to remember, there's an audience. And by the time you climb to the roof, the psychology of the match is, okay, somebody's coming off of this roof.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Yeah. So we finally get to the point where we say, Tony.
Yeah, Shane McMahon, don't climb to the top of Hell in a Cell to not jump.
And then
right?
punch Undertaker and then climb back down. No, it's not going to happen.
It's not how shit happens.
So we're on the roof and we're finally like, you know what, Tony, if you decide you're not going to do this, we're just going to commit a felony and throw you off the roof. Oh. That's all we can really do.
Oh, no.
So he finally,
were you guys that clip from craziest or whatever?
We very well could have been, because this is right around 97, 98, you know, at its pinnacle of backyard wrestling and ECW and everything that's going on. So eventually Tony just kind of mans up and says, screw it, let's do it. And he gets himself almost too hyped. So Matt ends up throwing him, like physically throwing him, not letting him take his own bump. Tony jumps as far as he can possibly jump.
Oh, no.
Now, mind you, we'd set up a very minimal amount of protection for him down below on the patio, the concrete patio. He overshoots. It almost worked to his advantage because he overshot the announce table and landed on the lawn, which still did not sound good. It was a very sickening thud that we have on audio on three or four different cameras.
Boom.
Yeah, and that was pretty much the end of our backyard wrestling career because Tony was very, very much in pain.
I got one of my buddy's backyard things shut down because I bled one time. They were like, don't you bleed. And I was like, I'm doing it anyway. I can't let these people down.
You were gigging at 16 years old.
Of course I was. I was a dumbass little kid.
So we actually recently, what is the name of the Fist Combat?
It's been a million names, but yeah, Fist Combat is the one we were sticking with for like last year.
I was just doing research on you because I was doing my homework for this podcast. Very professional, as you said.
Yes.
You were just recently in a chain match.
Yeah.
Where not only for the folks that don't follow professional wrestling, Seabass, as your wrestling name, as you've become known.
Now it is. Used to be Santa Cruz Kid, but I'm 32. I'm not from here.
Yeah.
So it was a stretch.
People called you out?
Yeah, a couple did. A couple of locals were like, you're
from
not
St.
From
Louis,
here.
The Santa Cruz Kid. That doesn't make sense. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
So Seabass, in a blood feud, literally a blood feud with your arch rival, whose name I can't remember
right
now.
Jackpot Scotty Ringer.
Scotty Ringer, that son of a bitch Scotty Ringer. So you guys are in a chain match, and you guys are essentially attached by a huge chain.
20-foot chain, yeah.
And you guys are attached. You have it on one arm, he has it on the other. You guys are able to use it as a weapon, beat the crap out of each other. You guys are beating the crap out of each other, and by the end of the match, you're in a big pool of your own blood.
Yeah, that was really scary, honestly. Like, at one point, like, I have bled in matches before, you know, no doubt. But, like, this one was by far the most. Because, like, all of a sudden, I put my hand in my head and I look down. There's just, like, a pool, right? And I could feel it just filling back up on my face. And it's just dripping off like I had been in the sauna for 30 minutes or something. And, you know, and it's just dripping. And like, you could see my face. Which, if you just search pro wrestling in Santa Cruz, all of our videos come up. But you see the blood coming off of me, and I'm like, oh shit.
It's a little much.
No. It's a lot of blood. You know, and then you're like, oh no, it's not going to close up. I'm just going to mix with sweat. It's going to keep coming. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's dude. Yeah, yeah, maybe it might be predetermined, man, but pro wrestling, dude, it's a rush.
No, I think for the most part, one of the best things and worst things that happened in professional wrestling is, A, the business was exposed. Everybody knows the predetermined finishes, right, that you guys are
which
working
is fine.
Together.
Nobody thinks Arnold Schwarzenegger is really a robot, you know, like in Terminator or whatever, right?
I'm not convinced he's a human, but yeah, you're right.
Okay,
so,
I agree with that.
The part of what I'm going
he
with that,
the WWE
though.
WWE Hall of Fame, though.
Yeah, you know, part where I'm going with that, though, is it did open up people to the education of the business where they at least realize that, you know what, yeah, you might be calling spots, but you guys are connecting on some of those punches, and you guys are, you know, physically maiming each other.
Yeah, you know, when you land on the, you know, when you land on the ground, like, people are, I think that the thing that surprises people the most is that when they look at, when they're around, when either the ring's getting set up or taken down, and they're like, oh my God, that's just a canvas on, like, half an inch of padding on wood, wooden planks and steel right under it, you know, that like has pretty much no give, you know, so, you gotta really learn what you're doing.
Yep. So we're talking to that is Seabass. That is your alter ego, Seabass, the professional wrestler. Yeah. On stage doing comedy, you are known as Mikey G.
Yep.
At least currently.
Yeah.
Can you what's the atmosphere like between, you know, hitting a high spot in professional wrestling and popping the crowd versus just closing out a show or closing down a show with just a, you know, a bit that kills? Is there a parallel there? Is one give you a better feeling than the other?
As my girlfriend will tell you, when I'm on stage, like I'm in the zone. Like I can't even hear the crowd really. Right. That's why I'm pretty sure it's going to be a good set with a good crowd. I'm always taping them, always. Same with wrestling. Like I don't get to watch it and soak it in while I'm there performing it. So I come home and I'm almost immediately throwing that on the screen and watching it to see what it is and to soak it in from that perspective. But like there is no better feeling in the world than hitting a high spot, having the crowd chant your name, you know, hitting that joke that just kills. And then, you know, you pause and waiting for, you know, your follow up, you know, you're tagging the joke more. And it's just like you got people in the palm of your hand. And that's why I think there's so many parallels between comedy and pro wrestling. But wrestling is by far the best form of entertainment ever. You got comedy, drama, improv, stunt work, you know, like all of them, you know, you can have horror, you know, you can put fear in people with certain wrestlers, you know, like it's amazing the emotions that come into pro wrestling, and there's nothing better on the planet.
You know, Mikey G is on the Cottonmouth Comedy Tour. First stop was in St. Louis, your hometown. Is that correct?
Well, the things have kind of been running, you know, for a hot minute, but on that run, definitely, that was the second show of the run in St. Louis, hometown comedy club on a Monday night, you know, supposed to be free to come to the show. And, you know, I'm glad we touched on the Afro Man stuff. Like there isn't a day that I'm booking a show or doing something or producing it or wrestling or whatever that I'm not learning something.
Sure.
And it just builds and builds and builds like a big snowball coming down a hill. And, you know, like I kind of had some bad feelings about St. Louis when we showed up to the building, because my deal with the venue, you know, was they give me X amount of dollars, a couple $100, right? But the show is supposed to be free to attend. And, you know, as a comic and producer, you know that if there's a free show, it's free to attend. You throw out a tip jar at the end and it doesn't seem tacky at all.
Right.
And sometimes you'll get more money that way than putting a $5 cover charge on the show, you know, because, yeah, you know, 100 people might pay $5, but you might get some 20s, some 50s even in the tip jar.
I recently did a show. It was a free show. Just a local thing at a bar. I think max capacity was 25. I had three people in the audience come up and give me $20 tips specifically for me and told me not to split it with other comics. And it was more than I would have ever imagined. I mean, yeah, it's $60, but I was planning to walk out of there with considerably less than that.
Right. You know, and it's not like it's a carny pro wrestling swindler way to be like, oh, it's a free show, hey, and then guilt people into giving money. It's not like church, you know. No. We're not like throwing the bucket right in front of your face and saying, you know, looking at you like God's gonna be pissed if you don't put a couple bones.
And for the record, I don't want to speak for you. I mean, because we love getting paid and we love when people give us money on the tip jars. But if you are in the audience and you don't have money to give and you still enjoyed yourself, for the most part, comedians, just for the people in the audience, we're okay with that too. I mean, I am. I mean,
1,000%.
If you came, had a good time, just tell us you had a good time afterwards. You know, come say hi. We're pretty approachable. Unless you're ugly, we don't want to talk to ugly people.
No ugly people.
Ugly people, you give money in the tip jar.
I mean, it's just like, you know, when you go out and buy drinks and you tip a bartender, you don't tip a bartender. I mean, if you're not going to tip a bartender, don't go out and buy drinks.
By the way, for the comedians who are at shows that are free shows, tip your fucking bartender, even if they give you just water. Even if it's a dollar.
I tell you, I tip extra, and I make sure the bartender knows, hey, this is for my comic friends that aren't tipping you on those drink tickets I gave them.
Whether she's pouring a beer or pouring wine or giving you water, she's still doing what she's, you know, going out of her way to make sure you're being taken care of. But I'm digressing right now,
yeah.
Mikey G. I want to get back to this St. Louis thing because...
Totally.
This is fascinating to me. This is why I wanted to talk to you. I mean, I want to talk to you anyways, but this is kind of why we're sitting here right now. I want to figure out what happened in St. Louis because, spoiler alert, it ends with you going to jail.
Totally. I am a hothead, first of all. I've been known to be a hothead every once in a while. And this was a very important show to me because I had watched all the comedy legends at a comedy club. This club has been around for 30 years in St. Louis. You know, this is where I saw anybody that I'd ever seen, you know, in St. Louis. That wasn't a big show, you know, at a little arena or something. So, you know, doing that show was a big deal to me. So when to, you know, like all my friends started calling me up that day, they're like, hey, they're charging people $5 at the door.
And this was supposed to be a free show.
It totally, like the emails, all the correspondence, he, you know, responds back to me, here, all the tickets free. And I'm like, yeah, I thought this is what we talked about. He's like, okay, just double checking. And these are emails that happened 2 months before the show happened when we agreed to everything. You got the poster, which, by the way, it was real funny that my poster wasn't hanging up anywhere because on my poster it says free.
Mm.
Right. So
I'm sure it's a coincidence.
Right. You know, so like, you know, I've dealt with assholes before and, you know, people that changed the deal on you before, you know, in pro wrestling, if somebody changed the deal or didn't pay you what they were supposed to, you took them out back and beat the shit out of them. Now there's too many cameras around. And so this guy's kind of talking to me like, okay, so people call me up. Hey, you know, they're charging $5, you know, whatever. Nobody's really, you know, they're just kind of checking in with me. They're like, they're not weird about it. They're just like, oh, hey, this is supposed to be free, you know, right, whatever. So we show up at the venue. I'm like, hey, dude, you know, the show is supposed to be free. He's like, well, how am I supposed to pay you? I said, well, you know, like, there's a club. I advertised the 2-item minimum. You know, like, you told me you were going to give me, we'll just put it out there, $300. $300 what they were giving me for the free to attend show. He only had 30 reservations, which he was upset about, and there were over 100 people that came to the show. So, you know, like I told him, I said, my people don't reserve, you know, especially if they don't, you know, it's a free to attend show.
Right.
You know, like, I'm going to try to tell them all, reserve your spots. Anyway, people showing up, texting me, you know, which I like to be in the zone before the show anyway, especially if I'm doing 45 or more. I ended up doing an hour that night anyway. So I'm talking to this dude. I'm like, yo, it's supposed to be free. It's like, how am I supposed to pay you? And well, I don't know how you work your business, but you know, like if we say something and we have a deal and then you go and change it on everybody, then that looks bad on me.
Right.
So now I'm all tense up. You know, this show's a big deal to me. So I'm already hyped up. You know, we get a couple drinks as was, you know, promised to us, right? So
out of curiosity, what were you drinking? This is predictably drunk.
I have three vodka and Red Bulls and 2 shots of Fireball. My second one I get right when I get on stage to do it as a toast to everybody when I start.
That's your normal routine on stage?
You start 2 hours before you go on stage, and that's my, yeah, you have to have a, you have to, because, you know, I eat pretty consistent.
Yeah.
You know, you know, like 5 meals a day. So, like, I know where I'm at all the time. And, you know, I don't want to be going up there getting all fucked up. You know?
No.
I'm not Doug Stanhope. I can't do that shit.
No, it's not your act. You know, unless it's your act, there's no reason to do that. I've talked about that ad nauseum on this podcast. But I was just wondering out of curiosity, not to throw you off here.
No, not you didn't at all. So, you know, he's like, how do you want me to pay you? I'm like, dude, whatever. And then, you know, I'm like, here's what we want to do. I want to do, don't pay me the $300. Give everybody back their cover charge. Well, he said, well, some people didn't pay and other people paid $5. He goes, here, how about this? I'll pay you at the end of the night. You can give whoever you want back their $5. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. It's bullshit that you're doing this. So I go out and I start my set by wasting 2 minutes explaining this whole thing to everybody, getting it all off my chest. Hey, you know, like I told this guy to give everybody their money back. What?
Hey, you got
to
kill an hour, 2 minutes. That's good.
Of course. But it's my family and friends. Yeah. That's the thing, is that I begged all my family and friends. I was making it a big deal to them, this show. So, because it was a big deal to me, you know, and I figured if I have a good showing on an off night, Monday night, you know, and 100 people or plus show up, this guy's going to give me a paid gig every time I come through St. Louis.
Right.
And so, right? Then all this shit starts happening. So then I get off the stage and I'm talking to this guy and, you know, like he's just a total piece of shit. And he's like, let me go write you a check. Right. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
How are you supposed to pay people?
Well, first of all, nobody's really asking for their money back, but hey, now fuck this guy, right?
Right.
So I'm like, how am I supposed to pay people? I can't take a check, right? I don't take checks. That's a rule for me anyway. I don't fucking take checks. You know, like, I need cash. You took cash from people at the door. Give me that cash, bro.
Exactly.
So, and then he comes in and he goes, hey, what's up with these drinks? And I go, what drinks are you talking about? He goes, well, those comics order drinks. I go, well, those comics aren't me, man. You know, like, if you let people take drinks from your bar, like, now I'm being a dickhead.
Right.
Because this guy's a dickhead. I'm like, well, if you're going to let people take drinks, I didn't order those drinks. I ordered one shot of Fireball before I went on the stage from your bartender. So take that out of my $300 check that I'm getting now. So the dude's like, oh, he goes, are you serious? And he's drunk at this point. Are you serious? And what do you mean? Am I serious? So now I'm just all amped up. I had just killed for an hour, right? Murdered the stage. It was my family and friends. I was fucking on cloud 27, bro. You know, I'm floating.
That's so, three cloud nines. I like that.
You got triple three's a magic number. So this guy gets back. He writes me this check for $242.50.
That's an expensive Fireball shot.
Well, no. So yeah, right. So he takes off $57.50 off my shit. So now I am just, I'm fucking livid, right? And hold on, let me rewind. The waitresses were total see you next Tuesdays to everybody. Oh, you're ordering water and just talking shit about me. And oh, this show isn't funny. You know what? The whole show, fucking around the whole show, just being total assholes. So now I get my check, right? And I'm like, yo, I'm like, this is fucked up. And they're just back there cackling. They're like, oh my God. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I'm like, you guys do business like this all the time? And they're like, yeah, we do business like this all the time. It's great business. We make a lot of good money. I go, oh, this is how you do business. And I looked and there was all the glassware that was sitting on the bar. Uh-oh. Right. And years of frustration and people fucking the entertainers and me being, I try to take care of everybody so good, right? And, you know, pay them before they even go up on stage or into the ring or what. I try to do it as much as I can, right? You know, and to have these people treat me like this is, I'm all amped up. And I just looked at all the glassware that was sitting on there and I was like, oh yeah, you guys do business like this? Well, this is how I do business. And I took my arm like I was one of, you know, them coin machines that like rake the coins and you win the coins, right? Yeah. I was just like a rake, like the hook on a craps table, bro. I just like raked all those glasses on the ground. I go, I just took them, bam, crashing
Mikey G
everywhere.
Turned into Seabass.
Bro, I turned into the Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, all in one, brother. I was going, I in my mind, I was just like, oh, like, in my mind, they were already going to bounce the check anyway. The check wasn't even going to cash.
Right.
So in my mind, I'm like, I just did this show. This dude wrote me a check. All my family and friends, everybody's waiting for me in front of this club right now. This is how this is going to go down. Mikey, you don't get down like that, you know? And like, you know, that sketch on Chappelle's show is like when Keeping It Real goes wrong. Like, this is what went down. Right. So I did that shit and I was just like, and you know, like, I just got all amped up and they came out and they're like, we're going to call the cops, right? And my friends and family are like, oh shit, what went down? You know, and I'm like, I told them, you know, fuck your glasses or whatever. And then I told them all to suck it and crotch chop myself. And it was stupid, but I was so amped up, right? So, you know, here's where it got really stupid is now my brother's trying to talk sense to me. He's like, hey, you're going to get arrested. They're definitely calling the cops. You know, I heard him on the phone. And we had followed to the car now. Family and friends all want to drink with me and hang out, right? And I'm like, shit, we got to get in the car. We got to get out of here, right? So I start coming to my senses a little bit. You know, I was conscious the whole time. You know, like, I don't want to act like I
Yeah, you were just heated, though.
I was just fucking, you know, like, I knew what I was doing. And I was like, as I was doing it, I was like, man, I wish somebody was here to record this. Like,
right.
How awesome would that be? I want that footage.
It's called evidence, Mikey.
Well, I don't care. You know, like, I'm bragging about it right now on your podcast. You know what I'm
Very
saying?
Very true.
Like,
and my audience appreciates that. So thank
well,
you.
You know, like, and the response to that, I'm not going to end yet. So we're walking to the car and then the manager comes out. He's taking a picture of my car. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm taking a picture of your car. I said, it's not my car. It's a rental. He goes, oh, it's a rental. Well, I'll turn you into a rental agency. And I go, oh yeah, are you? And I spiked his phone down to the ground.
Oh.
A guy had just like won the winning touchdown with 2 seconds left in the Super Bowl, brother. I spiked it down to the ground. I kicked it across the parking lot. I looked at him. I go, what are you going to do, motherfucker? I'll rip your head off and shit down your throat. Like, I was so amped at that point. And like, I felt like Rocky, you know, like a whole crowd of people was behind
they're
me.
They're on
and
your side.
Like, and they're on my side. And I got fucked, man.
Yeah.
And fucked this shit. you know, I went to bat for everybody there because that's fucking bullshit the way it all went down. Anyway, the cops arrest me and fucking clink me up. They're totally on my side. Yada, yada, yada. They're like, hey, there's really nothing we can do. They got me a summons going on, and I'm not going back to St. Louis. So
you lost a loser-leave-town match, essentially. You can't go back to St. Louis anytime soon.
Yeah, and then we cashed the check the next morning, and it turned out that it was bounced. It bounced. So
they probably put it like a stop payment or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the lady at the bank, although she told us she could lose her job, she told us that they canceled it that night. So, like, you know. Oh, turns out, oh, yeah, the cops assessed the damage. I only did $60 worth of damage. I was so pissed. So it turns out the amount that they took out of my check, the $60 basically, is all the damage that I did. Because when the cops pulled up, I came out of the car, hands up, with check in my hand. I was like, hey, I did damage in there, and here's their check. They can have their check back. You know, like, fuck them. You know, and it turns out I only did $60 worth of damage, but they stopped payment on the check anyway, so fuck them. Fuck the funny bone in St. Louis. Fuck that Matt Barron's guy that runs that place. He's a piece of shit. And, you know, the comics in St. Louis warned me, don't do business at the funny bone after I booked that show, and I didn't listen to him, and I should have. But you know what? It's a great story, and I got to do this awesome podcast, you know, so.
Wow. And, you know, Matt, if you're listening, I am available. You can find me on my website, Predictably Drunk. No, Mikey G, fantastic story. I thank you for sharing that story. I was wondering what happened because you had some, you know, we're friends on social media, and you know, I know you're jazzed about the Cottonmouth Comedy Tour, and especially going home to St. Louis, your hometown. I mean, like you said, pump show. Monday night, you can't get 100 people in a comedy club on a Monday night. That's saying something. That's telling of what, you know, the drawing power that you have in St. Louis right there.
In St. Louis, yeah. Alone, that's it.
But still, I mean, you know, that's a good thing.
Totally.
And so to go in and then have all that happen to you, you had to have just felt like shit. I mean, just like, man, this is happening in front of my hometown people, my friends, my family. It was supposed to be almost a celebration of you here on a Monday.
Totally. And, you know, and the thing that really razzed me about the whole thing is that, like, sometimes, you know, like, I've had things happen to me where in St. Louis, I booked Afro Man for a show and he no-showed the show. I had one other show where he showed up 2.5 hours late. He was the headlining set and he showed up an hour and a half after the last act had been done. Right. So like I've had some bullshit happen to me. I've run some, you know, some shady operation parties in St. Louis that got shut down or whatever the fuck. So to have something that looks shady go on in front of my friends and family, like, oh, shit, it's just another Mikey G fucking shady thing again, or, you know, some weird thing, or, you know, whatever the fuck. And, you know, like, yeah, I've learned different ways to fail. You know, I've learned a lot of ways to fail, but I don't make the same mistakes twice. You know, I won't be booking St. Louis at the Funny Bone again. You know, the worst part about it was seeing Snapchat stories the next day of all the friends that were at the after party at my brother's house making fun of me being in jail.
Oh, wow.
So, that, you know, that kind of sucked. But
just go over there and just break all their glasses.
Well, and my girlfriend was the one that was making, like, the funniest jokes, too. And that was the worst part. She was like, at least I'm not in jail.
Yo, where did she go? She was here for half the pause. She took off. I kind of wanted to get her take on this whole thing, too. She's doing her thing.
Where's you at? Where you at, Lucia?
This is Mikey G's lovely girlfriend, also comedian, Miss Lucia.
Hello.
Hello. So what are your thoughts on this whole thing? We just heard the whole story here from Mikey G and the homecoming gone wrong in St. Louis at the Funny Bone. What were your thoughts? You were there, obviously.
I mean, you know, it sucked what they did to us, but there's definitely, you know, a bunch of ways to handle the situation. Mikey handled it one way. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of him for standing up for himself. It's not what I would have done.
Is it one of those things, like, as this is your man and he's being animalistic in a way, which is almost, it's got to be a turn on some level, but at the same time, like, the logistics, the logic in your head's going, idiot, we got to get on a plane or we got to go here the next day. Like, you're fucking this whole thing up. Is it kind of like a dual thing going on there?
Well, yeah, because I don't have enough money to get him out of jail and, you know, all that stuff. And I don't know anyone in St. Louis except for his family, I guess, you know, so. But it all turned out okay. He got out before we knew it, and now he's here. Don't come looking for us, St. Louis police. I mean, he's not here. Yeah.
We have no idea where he is right now. We are underground, broadcasting from Mars.
Bunker.
That's right. So, you know, you go back on the Cottonmouth Comedy Tour here before too long. What are some other stops you got? Let's hit some places. Let's get some people out to your shows.
So if this is coming out on the 22nd, 23rd, 22nd, it's a Wednesday, or maybe a couple days before. We got the 23rd up in Astoria at Nature's Choice Dispensary, the 24th at River City Saloon in Hood River, Oregon. The 25th, we are at Mohawk Tavern in Springfield, Oregon. And then on the 26th, we're at Frankie's Bar and Grill in Olympia, Washington.
Love Frankie. He's a great guy. Or Frankie. Girl. I don't know who that Frankie. Is. So,
but yeah, all of our stuff, all my pro wrestling episodes, I produce a weekly television show, 30 minutes, airs in Santa Cruz and on YouTube. All of our Cottonmouth comedy tour dates, everything is on comedysuplex.com.
Comedysuplex.com, yeah, all things Mikey G, Seabass, yeah, wrestling comedy.
Comedysuplex. You'd be surprised how many people don't know how to spell suplex.
What are they doing, CKS or something like
they
that?
They don't even know what the fuck it is. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, it's... wrestling people know.
Well, thank you very much there, Mikey G, a.k.a. Seabass. Check him out, comedysuplex.com. You can find all of his comedy dates. You can check out the schedule for wrestling for Fist or Combat. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Fist Combat.
Fist Combat Television.
Yeah, Get Fisted.
Get Fisted. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. If you got nothing else to do on a Friday night, Saturday, go get yourself fisted. Yeah. Mikey G, thank you very much for joining us here. Best of luck on everything going forward on the tour. No more arrests. Okay, because I don't have too much bail money to get you out.
We're doing the jail tour in the fall.
There you go. You're going to go Johnny Cash and everybody to start doing comedy shows at the jail cell. And Lucia, thank you very much for joining us here today. And until next time, man, just keep drinking and enjoying life.
Peace.
Our thanks to Mikey G here on Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Is he our first criminal on the show?
No, but... I think publicly, possibly, yeah.
The first admitted, like self-admitted, I was arrested. Because, I mean, I've definitely had people on the show have been arrested before.
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, I've been arrested. I just have never been prosecuted.
You've been arrested?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Twice.
Another episode. We're going to talk about that on another episode. We're calling that a tease, ladies and gentlemen.
We're not getting into that.
And did you drop it twice on me?
Yeah, I've been arrested twice.
Wow.
How many times have you been arrested? Just real quick.
That's a different show, Matt. I don't know why you got to bring up old shit.
Just bring it. Just give us a number, and that'll get the crowd excited for the arrested episode, the arrested development episode.
I've definitely had a chauffeur while my hands have been behind my back a couple of times, but nothing major. I mean, it's nothing.
No.
But kind of teenager know what? Shit.
If we know funny people who also amateur/pro wrestle who have been arrested for that kind of thing, they're always welcome on this show. They're always welcome on Predictably Drunk.
Yeah, if you have a funny drunken story about you being arrested, ladies and gentlemen, or just being, you know, picked up by the cops, we have a couple of those stories. Our friend Joe recently was found in Ivy and then tried to run from the cops even though he wasn't in trouble and got himself... fucking thrown in the back of the car himself. We'll talk to him on another show too. We're open to that. We're open to you providing us, by the way, you craft beer makers, provide us with your beer, provide us with your alcohol. We'll drink it. We'll review it. We'll tell you whether it's good or not. Apparently Matt loves everything. So if you give it to him, he's going to give you a glowing review.
It's hard to dislike for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Predictably Drunk. We're going to talk about the smart things. The smart people are going to talk about the stupid things.
Yeah. Okay. There
That's
we
what
go.
We do. Speaking of stupid things, I don't know if this is brilliant or not. I got to, we're just going to talk about the stupid drunken news right now. And this is, found this on Yahoo News under Odd News. And it really is. It's a crowdfunded beer pipeline to protect the medieval city of Bruges, Germany, Matt.
Bruges.
So did you read this? I sent this to you. Did you read
this? Yeah, I did. I did my homework. And, I like the spirit behind this. I have issue with this.
So let's give a little bit of a backstory here. So basically, this guy is a beer maker in Germany, and for years he'd been making his beer and then loading it into trucks and driving these trucks over an old cobblestone road to like 2 or 3 miles away to get this stuff bottled so he can get it out to the public. And apparently it's a really good brewery and really good beer. He's got fans. He's clearly got fans, but he was basically going to shut it down because he was losing product. It was very hard to actually distribute this out to everybody, and he started joking about actually making a pipeline from the brewery to the bottling agency where they would actually flow gallons upon gallons upon gallons of beer that he makes underground to the actual bottling plant where then they can just, you know, bottle right there. Basically have a direct pipeline. I mean, literally a direct pipeline from the brewery to the bottling plant. The fans of his beer, of his beer making, basically, it's called the, he's called the Madman. Over 400 of his fans actually crowdsourced, crowdfunded, close to $400,000, if I'm not mistaken, to get this thing built. It cost $4.5 million to build this pipeline underground through the city. The city approved everything. Everybody went through it. Everyone approved this. So he can keep his business running, and now they have underground pipes, sewer pipes that are flowing over 1,060 gallons of beer an hour towards the bottling plant, which is 2 miles away from the industrial zone where he's actually making this shit.
That's intense.
That's insane.
How did $400,000 turn into $4 million?
So basically, he got this thing funded. So the total thing was about $4.5 million to actually make this pipeline. You know, get the permits, dig up the street to throw this under, you know, all the shit that goes into it. 10% of that $4.5 million was actually through crowdfunding. So fans out there basically just said, yeah, we'll give you – people giving him $11,000 to build a pipeline for beer just to kind of keep this guy going, which is insane. But, you know, he actually paid it forward. So people that spent close to like $8,000 American, so 7,500 euros – they get a free bottle of beer every single day for the rest of their life if they donated that much money to this project.
That's pretty cool. I dig that perk. I think my issue with this whole thing is, you know, and I get that driving trucks over cobblestone roads is for 2 to 3 miles. It's 2 to 3 miles. Get the fuck over yourself. Like, fucking deal with it. It's 2 to 3 miles or 6 kilometers, whatever the fuck the metric system wants you to tell, Europe, right? Trucked and bottled delicious beer versus funneling beer through a goddamn pipe. Like, we all know how old Europe is. Just through a disgusting, rusty pipe in the underground, the underbelly of old Europe. Like, who the fuck knows what's down there? I don't want to know. And I don't want my beer going through that, like, it's just old dirt, like century old dirt and possibly bodies and shit. Like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a new pipe. I mean, they dug up and put a brand new pipe in there. Is it, though?
Do we know that?
No, we don't. And the part that makes me question that a little bit is if you read the article, it does talk about, you know, look, you've got municipalities, regional, federal laws, all these things that are governing this little city and everything that it would take to lay pipe. I mean, you have to go through all kinds of, you know, approvals and all this shit, right? Get all these permits. Apparently, this city and everyone involved was like, no, fuck it, do it. Like, they just cleared the way. They got rid of all the red tape and just allowed this beer pipeline to be done. So either it's brand new pipe that you're running through. Even if it's brand new pipe, though, there's got to be some type of weird shit that's going on in there. There's going to be like a rat that's going to tunnel in. Like, you're going to get rat beer of some sort. You know what I mean? Like, it does seem a little bit weird.
Listen, if there was a very popular brewery in San Francisco, California, and people in Los Angeles were like, listen, pipe some of that shit down here. It'll get it to us faster. We'll throw up the money. That's California. In Europe, there have been 2 entire wars based on the fucking world. Okay? There had to be some kind of casualties seeping into the ground there. I just don't trust it. I don't trust it. There's too much history for my new beer, my newly brewed, apparently newly brewed beer, to be funneled through years of disgusting, horrible history. No. No, thank you.
Somebody who loves drinking and loves ingenuity and people coming up with creative ideas to solve problems, I applaud their effort. I give them an A+. For the effort of being fat, lazy assholes who just said, you know what, we don't want to drive trucks. Gas is expensive. We're going to bring some bottles. Fuck it. Dig a tunnel. Like, they did what you did as a little kid. We're like, I'm going to dig a tunnel to China. This guy's like, I'm going to dig a tunnel to the bottling plant, and we're just going to fucking pump thousands of gallons of beer from the manufacturing to the bottling plant, and then we're just going to drink it. I mean, how do you not, like, if you're also a genius, do you not just side drill in and try to siphon off some beer or some shit like that? Like, wouldn't you try to do that?
Yeah. If by the way, genius is not the right word for that. I would be a drunken idiot, and then I would definitely do that. I would definitely just dig until I found a pipe. It wouldn't be even the pipe, probably. I would just find a pipe and think, this is the one, and just start drilling. Oh. Just start drilling.
And then you would be arrested for a third time, and internationally this time in Germany. But
we don't bring that up. We're just teasing. We're just teasing for the arrested episode.
Yeah, statute of limitations is over. We can talk about all the stuff you did. You don't have to register as anything in particular anywhere, so
Woo-hoo.
Nothing like that. So that's good. But that was it, man. Stupid Drunken News. Our thanks to Mikey G and his ridiculousness out on the field, you know,
yeah.
out in the world, just getting arrested for our entertainment. Thank you to Drake's Denogonizer. And what were you drinking again, Matt?
I was drinking the Pick Six by Pizza Port.
Pizza Port and Drake's. Thank you guys for getting us drunk here on Predictably Drunk, Smart People Talking About Stupid Things. Coming up, I've got shows July 8th at the Roddy Ranch Golf Club.
That's all right.
Weird. It's weird.
Sure.
Yeah, but I guess I'm doing that. They're paying me. Whatever. I'll show up.
Yeah,
you guys pay me in booze, food, and money.
Party, whatever.
I will be there. I will make a beer balloon. If you had listened to our last podcast, I will do what I got to do to entertain myself and you.
Pay them in cake.
If you pay me. July 10th, a little more normal. Cobb's Comedy Club is part of the fifth
there
annual Summer Comedy Bash. I believe this is my second year in a row doing this out of their five. So 40% of the time, the show's been awesome. So that's me. You can find Matt cleaning up his own vomit as he throws up at the end of the podcast here. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at Tiger Clomedy. You can find the show on Instagram, Predictably Drunk. You can actually find a video of me making a beer balloon out of a water balloon and a keg. It's kind of a how-to. Not really. I just got bored and started making beer balloons. You can find Ross Baker in Reno drinking himself until he's sexy on the radio. And you can find Matt hanging out, doing nothing.
Yeah, taking care of a baby soon.
There you go. By the time you guys listen to this, Matt might be a father, actually. You got, like, what, like 2 weeks from the time we've recorded this until you you have a child?
12 days.
Yeah, that's about 2 weeks. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah,
that's close enough to 2 weeks. Yeah, it's coming up.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Somerville joining.
I'm scared.
Joining the Walking Dead, known as having a newborn child and no sleep and all that other fun stuff that goes on. No, you're going to be fine, man. Just keep drinking at the house instead of, you know, at the bars, and you'll get there. In fact, you know what, man? The first 6 months, it's fucking easy.
A lot of drinking.
Yeah, you get to do whatever you want. They don't move. It's when they start moving and having a personality that you're screwed.
No, I'm just going to keep them locked up in some sort of cage situation.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, nobody's going to tell you. That's basically what a crib is. A crib is a cage with a sunroof. Like, that's what a crib is.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
That's the plan for the next 5 years.
Like, you think they're going to do something? No, they suck. They don't do anything for like 6 months. And then out of nowhere, they decide, I'm going to roll over, and they fall off the couch. And like, well, I'm a little parent.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Thanks for giving me something to look forward to, Sam.
So you got 6 months to kind of limber up and then realize
good.
You know, that you're ready to go.
My life's over. Great. Right. Well, was a great episode.
Life's over. The podcast episode is over. Ross Baker, he's going to be over here in a little bit. So I guess that's it, everybody. Kind of a thud the way to end this. We just thudded on the ending here. But that's fine.
Yep.
They're not all winners, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening, as always. PredictablyDrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking and don't drop a baby.
Always drink and occasionally drop a baby. It's fine. That's fine.
We should end on that. I like that.
You've been listening to Predictably Drunk, Smart People Talking About Stupid Things, with your host, Sam Marcoux, and that other guy. What was his name again? Oh, it doesn't matter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and find the complete catalog on PredictablyDrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking. Passenger, that's parasitic. I don't think that anyone or anything is good enough. We perceive the life we live in terms of all the gifts we give.